to Red Eyes Radio. Thank you for tuning in today. Glad you're with us. I'm Henrik from Sweden, and on today's program, we are speaking with Bob Whitaker and Tom Bowie. Bob Whitaker is running for president on the American Freedom Party ticket, AFP. He's been a college professor, international aviation negotiator, Capitol Hill staffer, Reagan administration appointee, and writer for The Voice of America. Now, Whitaker has written numerous articles and three books, but is perhaps these days best known for being the creator of what's known as the mantra. For example, diversity is a code word for white genocide, or anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. He has developed this as a strategy to fight white genocide. You might have seen some of the billboards, by the way, across various parts in America. We'll talk a bit more about that later. Also with us, we have Tom Bowie. He is the AFP vice presidential running mate. He's been a member of the U.S. Marine Corps and the Maryland Defense Force. Bowie formed a STAR, State Tactical and Response Team, chartered an explorer troop under the Boy Scouts of America, and has worked with the State of Maryland Department of Health as a health and safety specialist and a special police officer. Stay tuned as we talk more with these gentlemen about how the mantra actually works and this year's presidential race and what their goals and aspirations for running really is. All right, we're here with Bob Whitaker and Tom Bowie. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here. It's great to have you both with us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, well, very good. We have a lot to talk about. I wanted to get some more insight into the American Freedom Party and kind of how you gentlemen both ended up getting involved and some of the issues that you run on or whatnot. But let's begin with you, Bob. Tell us about how you got involved in the American Freedom Party.
Well, I've known these people for a long time. Can I talk about the South Carolina situation? Because I'm going to offend people.
go ahead.
You know, South Carolina used to be known for its rebellious temperament. But South Carolina voters today are so loyal it would make a dog jealous. The Republican establishment tells the white voters what to do. The Democratic establishment tells the black voters what to do. I mean, it's just the reality of the politics. And the fact that Trump won in New Hampshire, what they did when Buchanan won in New Hampshire, they spread the word that a good Republican would vote for Bush. And so it completely stopped Buchanan in South Carolina. They will vote the way they're told to. Now, the secret of this is that South Carolinians, a lot of them are desperate to be looked on as suburbanites instead of rednecks. And all you have to do, and the essential point is, they say, if you vote respectable, people in New York, they'll say you're a suburbanite, not a redneck anymore. Yeah. And it works like charm. So I just wanted, that is the way politics actually works here in South Carolina these days.
Well, let me ask you about that, because obviously we had Dylann Roof last year. How influential has that whole event been, do you think, to in terms of changing the environment in South Carolina? I mean, we had the whole flag debacle in Columbia, right? This has been...
Yeah.
Things have changed quite radically, it feels like, in the last year or so.
Well, nothing's changed. No. The entire state legislature was told that if they didn't take down that flag, there'd be a bunch of rednecks. And practically every member of both houses co-sponsored it. Like I said, it would make a dog jealous of how we follow orders here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Tom, tell us a bit about how you got involved with the American Freedom Party.
Well, I had a loose association with some of the members over time. But when a request was made at Bugs for anyone looking to assist with the ongoing campaign of Bob Whitaker, or perhaps even running for office ourselves, I volunteered to run for any type of local office I figured I could get into, and added the provision I would do whatever was necessary. And lo and behold, I got a request how would you like to be the VP candidate? And my words of do whatever necessary echoed in my ears. Uh-oh.
That is a scary thing to say in politics.
Well, there you go. Well, just for people who kind of don't know about the background here, and let's say they're tuning in to the first time, they're listening to you guys, they haven't heard you before. Bugs, tell us more about that, Tom. What is that? And you know, because if that's the area you kind of got involved in first, tell us a bit about that.
Bugs stands for Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar on Fighting White Genocide. It points out the obvious over and over again and helps break the consensus trance, the brainwashing that's been inflicted on people for so long, in a way that no rational person can actually deny it for long. It shows the contradictions within the system.
Very good. So this is where we get things like the mantra from and all this stuff of memes and repeating things over and over. Tell us a bit about that, Bob. You've been very instrumental in bringing that to the forefront and you know, getting people involved in that. What's the background to that? What were some of your ideas that you...
Well, to start with, it's taken about 18 years to develop it. I was on Capitol Hill, and I know what professional politics looks like. I mean, power politics. You know, the latest thing on the news. And I knew this was going to be a long, hard struggle. So I started repeating the mantra. And there's the storm front. They had opposing views, and I just cleared them out with the mantra. I developed the mantra. And now, most of the parts of the mantra are used separately, like white genocide and any racist is a code word for any white. But it took me years to develop this stuff, years to get people where they would stop trying to talk about what we're going to do next week. And they started doing what people in the 60s did. They got on any discussion and threw our stuff into it.
And it's been successful, I guess, to a certain degree.
Seems like, well, it's now viral, but a lot of people act as if I had come up with this all of a sudden. You know, this is serious. Power politics, white genocide is now general. And that took, like I say, we're talking, well, 18 years totally. And I developed it, I honed it down. And as I was explaining South Carolina politics to you, these things, you have to hone them down and hone them down until you have got exactly what you want to say. Then you try to find a group like Bugs, means Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, where people are willing, instead of taking over the world tomorrow or having a torchlight parade or whatever it is that people dream about, this is work. The Bugsers, a real Bugser here. You got a lot of training, and we use any outlet we can. And we hit them with the same thing again and again. You know, this is not a race problem. This is genocide against white people. And it's just now beginning to come out. But it took years.
Well, tell us, I mean, you've been a college professor. You've been an international aviation negotiator. You've been a Capitol Hill staffer. I think you were involved in the Reagan administration. Tell us a bit about the early days.
I can't keep a job.
Well, it's good if you've done many different things, of course. It gives you some experience. Yeah, but so how, I mean, were you thinking in these terms in the early days when you were involved in politics? Or yeah?
I had a book out in 1976, and between me and Bill Rusher, the publisher, believe it or not, National Review, we did the forward to a book called A Plague on Both Your Houses. And I called the conservatives exactly what they are, what they call, just getting around to calling them today. I said they just sort of fit. They make a living by being the opposition the other side wants. saying comfortable things. They see my specialty is saying things that they do not want to hear. They talk about diversity. It has nothing to do with diversity. The only thing diversity refers to is white people. Many a time I've been on a show and I've said, have you ever heard of diversity being discussed when it didn't mean less white people?
Yeah, that's right.
They usually just say, well, I won't discuss that or whatever. You know?
Yeah, it's extraordinary how they've shifted and changed the words there. Yeah, definitely, you know, getting in and talk more about the intricacies of that later and the nature of that. Let's see if we can get to some more, so our audience could get a bit of a better idea of kind of, I guess, what platform you guys run on, some of the issues you want to bring to the forefront, if this is, you know, an attempt to, you know, to get more information out there about this and dragging it into the political scene or, you know, basically how successful you guys think this is going to be. Tom, tell us a bit more about the platform and what you're aiming at here.
My major objective with the platform is to use it to spread awareness of white genocide and not propose solutions, but rather propose that there be a conversation, something that's prohibited. Even in the United States, it supposedly has freedom of speech. You can lose your job, and you can always count on the screamers, thugs, and thought police coming out to silence any dissent of the narrative.
And that's what we need to change. I mean, everybody's talking about the Illuminati or something else that's exciting. We keep talking about we want to be able to talk about this.
Yeah, right.
And other people don't consider that exciting enough.
Well, it's true that the government has enforced, or the authorities, the elite, or whatever you want to call them, has enforced speech, you know, control, even almost behavioral protocols in terms of how we can behave these days. But despite that, it's been the environment in the U.S. has been generally a little bit better than in some other Western nations, and specifically in Europe, where you can't talk, you know, much about some of these issues that are very controversial. But you guys in the States, you've had the First Amendment. It's been a little bit more open and free. But how true is that? Is that being
there? Is a coast to coast ban in the United States on all of my campaign signs.
Tell us more about that. What has happened?
You know, when they first did the First Amendment, the press didn't mean CBS News. It meant you could put, you know, you could build yourself a press right there. But, and so everybody got used to the fact that CBS and all the other, they were monopolizing the media with their own whatever they wanted to say. But we always assumed that anybody could put up a sign. I mean, and it's hilarious. We a sign that says diversity equals white genocide, and it is banned in the United States by the industry itself from coast to coast, and that is the first time I've ever heard of that one. I might want to mention it to somebody. Another thing is we have the tax-deductible organization. A tax-deductible organization is civilly and criminally liable if it suppresses points of view. It is required. Now, 201c3, that means deductible, not just tax-exempt. The Democratic Party is tax-exempt. This is any tax-deductible organization like a university, if we went after them, we wouldn't need anything but the administration and the IRS. We'd have them dead to rights. I feel a lot like, saying that, I feel a lot like the people who were dealing with Al Capone. Murderer, prohibition, you know, all of those things he was doing. How are you going to get him? And they said, taxes. And I'm sure the reporter said, tax? For God's sake, man. But we could nail, I could nail these people on their tax-deductible status. Get them in. I used to put together congressional hearings, and I'm sure you've heard a bunch of those, where you ask, put them under oath, and you say, are you prohibiting an opposing point of view? And don't back off. One time we were doing a, it was a hearing with the tobacco, what's it called, tobacco firearms, whatever,
ATF or something, yeah.
Yeah, and so what we did was, first, my boss would keep asking, well, what they wanted to do is a rule, make you register ammunition. And he kept asking, is this the first step toward gun control? I said, oh, no, yeah. I sent him a note. I handed him a note that said, swear them. And they had to take the oath. And now we were dealing with jail. And their complete testimony changed at that point. This is playing it rough. And I think we should go after these people on the things like saying that signs are banned. That doesn't sound too exciting, but it is so un-American, it's unbelievable. But nobody will talk about that. They want to talk about the Illuminati or God knows what.
Right. Well, you know, we have the billboards issue, and a number of them have gone up around, I think primarily in the South, And there's been, you know, quote, controversy surrounding these, and then afterwards they've been taken down and whatnot. But in most cases, these are, if I'm not mistaken, these are private corporations that, or even a private person in some cases, that owns these billboards, right? And they
They're all banned.
And they're all banned, exactly. So is it, I mean, what's the, is it enough for that private company or that person that owns them to have a kind of a, like a terms of service, and if they feel that that's been abused, they can, you know, exclude you from
well,
that?
Well, Laura here is my senior staffer, and she's the one who did all this. So let me turn it over to her, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
That's right, Henrik. What you're saying is absolutely right, that they have the right to determine what goes on those billboards, and if they want to deny us, they have that that right. So unfortunately, we're, as you said, we had the ones in the South that were allowed up, and then they got taken down, and the only one that we still have standing is in Arkansas.
It reminds me of a quote where somebody said, yeah, you're allowed to say anything you want to, but nobody says what's going to happen to you after you said it.
Yeah.
And all this freedom of speech crap, the every single sign company in America is under a ban. Of course, their business depends on other people, and they've got, and most people don't know that there's an outright ban on that. You know, to me, I don't know about you, but being raised in America, to me, that's about as heretical as you can get.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You've been priding yourselves on your freedom of speech and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, well, we're seeing this, not to derail us in a way and go off on a tangent here, but we see this in many other aspects, too, within, you know, social media and these various platforms, particularly online, where they basically, these private corporations basically just have a terms of service, which means, well, you're not allowed to offend anybody, you're not allowed to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is enough on the grounds on starting to censoring people. So to me, it seems it's an issue that we're struggling with when it comes to the private sector, maybe more so than the public. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it has to be mentioned. And that's what I have trouble with when I start talking about it. They want to get to the fascinating stuff. But most Americans are simply not aware of this.
That is true. Now, obviously, this is the what you're talking about here, Bob, is more or less the totalitarian tiptoe tactic, right? It's they they begin to enforce something on a very minor scale, and they say, no, 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 yeah. It's not going to change anything. And then eventually down the road, you're in a very changed environment overall. As I guess it's the same thing that applied to when the Immigration Act changed in 1965, right? They said, no, 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 it's not going to change the demographics of America.
Yeah.
Relax, you know, and now look at where we are today, right?
Exactly, yes. Everything us horrible old segregationists said was going to happen at the time, they said, oh, you're being an alarmist. There's not one thing we said was going to happen that hasn't happened in spades.
Yeah.
And the whole integration, they would say it's for intermarriage, and they would say, oh no, that's a redneck view, you know. And now they say so until I came up with the white genocide thing. Now all of a sudden, they're not set. They used to say it'll be a great world when it's all brown. You know. But now you can hear the screech breaks. But white genocide did that to them. But you have to get the thing down to something that can be repeated and repeated. Of course, as someone who runs a program, you know how hard that is.
Yeah, true. That is true. Let's talk a bit about what's happening right now in it's happening really all over the Western world, but we have Europeans who's built and, are at the foundation of many of these nations. But we have a scenario that's developing with this stuff about white privilege and, you know, mm-hmm. safe spaces from white people and all this stuff. It's going from integration to a point where we are today, where there's almost, to a certain extent, a form of segregation again, right, with terms of excluding white people, right, that we are not allowed into certain areas now, we're not allowed with certain jobs and whatnot. It feels like it's gone full circle around in the opposite direction. Any thoughts?
Cowards always get stepped on. If you don't stand up to them, which is what we said back then, you better either stand up to them or give up. If you say, well, we want to be neutral and so forth, that means there's nobody on your side. But you see, I like to say things like this in English, and nobody disagrees. I can't even find the SPLC. You know, they keep repeating what I say to show their contributors that I'm dangerous. But they don't ever contradict the statement that if only white countries are required to have massive immigration and integration, then that is genocide, definitionally. And from their point of view, fortunately, our side is too busy trying to sell something exciting.
Yeah, I mean, this is the... I think it was the United Nations, right? The declaration of, let me pull it up here, of genocide. And obviously, because many people run into that right away, they think genocide means, you know, bombs and guns and, you know, yeah. prison camps and everything else. But it's very different. So you're behind that, bringing that to the forefront. Tell us a bit more about how that happened when this kind of came into place for you, when you realized that, wait a minute, according to the convention, this is what they're doing. How did that come about?
I was saying that 60 years ago. How's that for a starter?
Yeah, that's long time ago.
I was one of those redneck segregationist types who were saying that you either have control or you don't. If you start this stuff, it's going to run out. It's going to, you know... And people would always laugh. They'd laugh at these rednecks talking about the danger to the white race. You know, they'd just laugh and talk about, oh, that's so low a class. You know. But everything we predicted has happened. You have to, if you have a border, you have to defend it. Or else it's not your country, one or the other. I never understood what part, I keep repeating this about the Constitution. The Constitution gives the United States exactly one purpose for existing: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Now, what kind of idiot can that make that into a nation of immigrants?
Right.
That's what they talk about the Declaration of Independence. They talk about the Declaration of Independence of all men are created equal, actually, which ignores what the word independence means. Independence means we run our affairs, you run your affairs. A declaration of that all men had to be equal worldwide would not be a declaration of independence. It would be a declaration of war, more likely.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed, Bob, the rhetoric change in, specifically during the Obama administration, how they've actually turned a sense of patriotism of the nation. I mean, this is something traditionally that the left and the cultural Marxists and all this stuff has been very much against. We have, you know, the agitators behind the scenes of Obama, like, you know, the guy who wrote Rules for Radicals and, you know, Saul Alinsky and some of these people. And what they very cleverly have done is that they've shifted this to favor their own position. Right now, for example, Obama says, well, all, you know, we're always been a nation of immigrants, right? I mean, I see some of these presentations he's done over, you know, Thanksgiving in the U.S. and stuff like that. And they're very skilled at using the words against people and spin it just in such a way so that people think that, you know.
I have never met anybody who could deal with my repeating what the U.S. Constitution says is the only purpose. The problem is nobody's going to repeat it. So here I am once again begging you to use this approach that we bugsers use. Repeat these things. They hate them. The SPLC goes bananas with us when we say anti-racist equals anti-white, period. And they cannot deal with it. But fortunately, on our side, we have lots of people who want to change worldviews and all that crap.
Yeah, well, you know, that's true. The SPLC, I see many of these other types of organizations too. They never actually anymore refute or discount or argue against. They basically just, you know, pull out something that you or others have said, and they let that stand on its own as being the disqualification of the message, right? They don't even know how to counter.
So far, they haven't been able to do that.
Right.
They have never tried to deal with white genocide. I'm good at this. I've been doing this all, you know, for two generations now. And when I come up with something like that, it's because it is so true that nobody can deal with it. And the person who is going to change the subject will be the guy on my side who wants to expand the discussion. I don't want to expand discussion. I want to beat the hell out of them.
You want to win. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's it. I want power. I want to win. And you cannot, and we have worked this thing, as Tom will point out to you, down to the point where we're pros at it. And we never get off the point. We never give them any leverage.
Yeah, Tom, feel free to, you know, jump in here too at any point. What do you think about this and the effectfulness of that message overall? Why does it work, in your opinion?
Truth.
Yeah, pretty much. It's basically point on. I've been in situations with a debate using the mantra and had another person there who was pro-white who would want to go into the educational mode, and you could almost hear a sigh of relief from the anti-white
exactly.
as they found something to seize upon. And every time I attempted to drag it back on the ultimate point of white genocide, they wanted to go back to whatever educational format had been raised in order to take control of the narrative again. They don't like something that's obvious and in your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds almost too good to be true, but that's why it's so hard to sell to our side, is people want to give them a whole new world view. And I am saying, doing away with my race is genocide, period. Most important thing in English language is that word, period.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And obviously this is not something they would ever admit to. They say it's exaggerations or equality or, you know, all these kinds of things. We've spoken with, you know, Horace or a.k.a. Tim Murdoch, and we've yeah. talked about this too with him. But, you know, he mentioned this point that, you know, repeating this is something that kind of like basically not getting into the nitty and gritty of the argument. We're kind of living in that, whether we like it or not, we're kind of living in that environment and that type of world now. It's yeah. Twitter, you know, it's 140 characters. If you can't say it in 2 seconds, that's it, and it's over. Very few will actually want to have a intellectual debate on these issues, right?
I hope, because freedom of speech is not a very complicated concept. We have a term, we call it tailgating, and that's when you, the other fellow, he wants to talk about anything but white genocide, and so he brings up something that will tempt you away, something you have a big, like gun control, or something that you have a big investment in personally, mentally, and then you go after him, and you fall, as Tom said, you fall right into this trap. You can't, it's hard to have a program, as you well know, it's hard to have a program based on this. But we need, when the enemy is in trouble, you don't really want to change your approach.
No, of course not. Why back off in that regard? But let's back up a little bit on this note, though, on this point, because we might have part of our audience with us who basically, they're not brought up to speed. They don't know. They might be tuning in for the first time. It might be detractors, enemies, call them what you want. Talk a bit about what is happening right now in America and in European countries is white genocide. How does this come together?
It came together with non-discrimination. The problem with non-discrimination is you can't have a country without discrimination. You can't have a society without discrimination. I'm not sure exactly what the rest of your question is.
Well, it's more, you know, how would you reason in terms of, you know, immigration we see this as population replacement today. But basically how we go from that
well,
to
see, that's
genocide.
The word, you see. I don't let people say population replacement.
Right.
I say you're talking about genocide. Then they'll mention diversity. And I'll say you're talking about genocide. And as Tom says, they wiggle and they desperately won't. They would give anything if you'd mention Jews or anything in the world, education, anything. But you do not tailgate. You don't follow them.
Right. But let's assume if they don't understand that, they can't see that 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Oh, they understand
right?
it perfectly. They're doing right. Their dream is a world where there are no white people.
Right. And even if it's, let's say, subconsciously in that way.
No, it's not subconscious. The same person will say the world will be a better place when there are no more white people in it. And then 5 minutes later, he'll say, white genocide? What are you talking about? You know. But if you keep reminding him of what he said, and this is work. This is hard work. Instead of running off trying to convince him of your ideas on gun control or education or something, you say, what you said was, you want a world without white people. That's called genocide. It's even in the genocide treaties. Any means by which you cause a race not to exist. is Psi. It means the disappearance of white people. And they will deny what they said in the same discussion. So you have to chase them and chase them. But don't let them say, you didn't get freedom of speech by looking real smart and saying, well, I want to discuss this subject and that subject. You said, we demand freedom of speech. We get to say what we believe. It's a very simple concept. As soon as you let the other side lure you into the other crowd, you know, then you end up with a nation of immigrants and the melting pot and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get disciplined. And this is essentially a discipline.
Now, let me go over these points here from the Genocide Convention. And I know, you know, again, I'm doing this also for a lot of people who might be new, as I said. We might have detractors tuning in, what have you. But let me just read this then. So from the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, under Article 2, it says that any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group as such: A, killing members of the group; B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to the members of the group; C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part; D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group; E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And it goes on to Article, you know, 3 and all that stuff too, but that's really the key right there. Now, so for those who don't understand that is actually things that are happening today, tell us a bit about that. Tom, you can jump in here too. What we're seeing in the...
If I were to say, I don't want there to be any more blacks on the face of the earth.
Oh, I know what would happen.
Well, if you heard 1,000 people say they want no more whites on the face of the earth.
Yep.
It is routine. But you have to nail them with it. It's a fight. It's as I say, a discipline. So it's very hard to get people to do it. But me and Tom, we're going to do it one way or the other.
Tom, any thoughts?
Yes. Often, how quickly a person who's never been exposed to the concept, how fast they grasp the concept is based upon their experience. I live in an area that's undergone drastic diversity, so to say, in the last 20 years. And yesterday I was talking to 3 construction workers. And before I had progressed very far into the mantra, one of them whispered, "No more white people. They're wiping us out."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if I had been talking to someone who was out of an area that had been undergoing such a change, it would have taken them a little longer to grasp the concept. Once you experience what diversity means, the words just clarify it and shine a light on exactly what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that the C part in what I read is deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And I mean, that's really what we're seeing all over the Western world, in Europe, in America, Australia, etc. There's massive amounts of immigration into the country.
Let me repeat, the same person who said 5 minutes before that the world would be a better place, he's looking forward to the white race disappearing completely, 5 minutes later, he will deny it.
Right.
So you have to force it and force it and force it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, exactly, because we have, I think we have conditions that are, you know, basically we have a political elite, we have, in some cases, together with you know, with businesses, for example, as, you know, the lady who runs Refugee Resettlement Watch has pointed out, it's kind of a public-private partnership, more or less, but they are, you know, they are calculating against our interests, obviously. They're calculating in such a way
they're calculating it's our existence. Now, see, when you say interests, you're sort of falling into the usual discussion. It's all money or something. They are fighting against our existence. And these little differences, as Tom and I know, when you really fight these things out, you have to insist on the exact wording. We're not trying to re-educate each other about banking system or money or anything. It's not interest. It's our existence.
Now, let me ask you guys a bit about what we've seen in recently with Trump. We have more. We're going to take a break here in a little bit. We have much more to talk about in the second segment about this. But before we take a break here, I wanted to ask you guys what you think about what's been going on in terms of the presidential race so far with Trump and with the way that the media has been trying to basically do everything they can to associate. I think he retweeted like a white genocide account here. It was like probably a week or so ago. But quite a bit of attention has actually been drawn to this because of that. What do you guys think of that? Is that good? Is that, you know, any way to get the word out? Is that effective at the end of the day?
Well, I have been in Republican politics in South Carolina. I was the first young Republican chairman in 1962. I was handing out petitions in 1954 for Strom Thurmond. Of course, he wasn't a Republican at the time. But every election, every 4 years, we're not talking about two times, we're not talking about three times, we're talking about a dozen times, a Republican would come out, get to the head of the polls by saying all the right things to the grassroots. Then, he would, when it, the primaries were over, and he had a real nomination dangled before him, the Republican leadership, he would call them, and he would, as I say, grovel and pee on himself. To try, as we expect Trump to do, or as I expect Trump to do, saying, no, I was never in it, really against me. I wasn't violating any holy writ. You know, I wasn't talking about white genocide. He retweeted a thing, but as I say, half the people say that means that he endorsed it. Half the people say means he didn't. But this is what Republicans always, it's not, we're talking about sometimes, always do. They almost say it, and then they're on their tummies, peeing in their pants before the Republican Party.
Right.
Yeah. And here in South Carolina, I think they, I can't imagine dog-like obedience as, you know, Republicans here are. The chance to be called suburbanites instead of rednecks, there is no way that I can see that they would vote for Trump, because New York would say, how low a class can you get? Now, this sounds ridiculous, but it's most things that make sense in politics sound ridiculous when you state them.
Tom, any input on this?
Yeah. Donald Trump is a good opportunity to help spread the message. Mm-hmm. And he has sort of an outrageous character that will, he said the most outrageous and astounding things that no political person has ever said before and stands by them. But it's only when confronting the heart of the issue, that this is white genocide, that he begins to know fear. The man with no fear knows it on this topic because it's so ingrained in the system that even he is terrified of it, and he will backslide. He's already started on that path to some degree. But every little bit of mileage that can be gotten out of Donald Trump to spread that message of white genocide and to open up free speech, actual free speech on this topic, is worth whatever you do.
And let's give Ann Coulter credit. she actually said, "White if you treat any other race like this, it would be genocide." She said it in so many words. Mm-hmm. She didn't Republicanize it.
Yeah, she's done some interesting things lately. She's gone over that that edge, I think, you know.
Well, she actually said it. See, if you're a political professional, you notice whether somebody said something or almost said something. This is a very important distinction to me that wouldn't mean a whole lot to people who hadn't spent their lives in politics. But she stated it flatly, and as I say, I think Trump is, first of all, South Carolina, I predict, is going to vote for anybody the establishment tells them to. That's true of both races. The Democratic Party hands out lists for people, for blacks. And down here, they sort of say that it's very lower class to be for somebody like Buchanan or... But it happens every time. And what always gets me is nobody seems to notice it every time. I mean, 50 years is a long, long time.
Yeah, oh, it is, of course. Now, gentlemen, we're going to, as I said, take a break in a little bit here, but I want you to talk about the American Freedom Party a little bit more, what people can do to get involved, how they can support you. If you want to tell us a bit about your aspirations, go ahead. We can talk more about that in the second too, if it's a bit more drawn out. But Tom, let's switch over to you here for a moment. Tell us about the party and how people can get involved.
The American Freedom Party. A quick Google search, you'll find their website, and they have membership. They have other suggestions on how to support them. And they were founded to do something that's very prohibited under political correctness. Give the only group that is not permitted a racial identity a voice as a racial identity, and to preserve and that race. This is something that the system would definitely not permit under the rules of political correctness, that our race actually get to have a voice as a race. And they're a very worthy organization. As this program continues to become more onerous and more apparent, and the message begins to leak out, I expect they will become a much stronger and more vibrant voice for our people.
Yeah, Bob, any additions about the party and how people can support it?
It's like everything else these days. Look on the Internet.
Well, I want you guys to tell us about it. That's why we have
it's
you
right
here.
There.
Right?
Well, we do tell you about it. There are sites. Everything is already there.
All right, very
good. Old folks, that's kind of funny. We used to go to the library and so forth. But these days, I can't tell you as much as the net can.
Now, that is true. That is true. Okay, so we have robertwhitaker.com, where they can find more about you, Bob. We have, let's see, what is the, well, we can, I know people can search for it, but let me find the actual direct address there for the website.
Yeah, whitaker2016.com.
Whitaker2016.com. Okay, very good. That's also where people can go find out more.
I can't get Laura to talk here. And once she gets talking, she's terrific, but it's, you know, stage fright.
All right.
The other website is theamericanfreedomparty.us. That's theamericanfreedomparty.us. That's for the American Freedom Party website. And Bob's campaign website is whitaker2016.com. That's Whitaker with one T. whitaker2016.com for his campaign website.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. I just want to make sure that people, you know where to go if they want to help you guys financially or get involved in some other way. Do you want to tell us about the bugs and all that? Where can people go for more information on that?
Sure. For Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar is whitakeronline.org/blog. So that's whitakeronline.org/blog.
All right, folks, we'll take a short break here. Then much more I want to ask you guys in the second. We can continue to talk a bit more about what's going on in the presidential election cycle in the U.S. here now in 2016 and much more in terms of the work that you guys are doing. So we'll take a short break here. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with more after this break. Second hour with the gentleman behind the white genocide meme, Bob Whitaker, and his running mate, Tom Bowie, is coming up. RedIceMembers.com is the website where you can hear our continuation and all previous shows. Now, in the members half, we look at the central issue of the U.S. government turning against the best interests of its own people and how Donald Trump is riding the wave of discontent and Americans are fed up with the anti-white politics enforced right now. Bob and Tom explain how a third party can use the state election process to its advantage to grab ballot tickets from the huge chunk of independent voters that are basically disgusted with the system and ready to hitch on to a revolution. We weigh up the crumbling components of the Democrat versus Republican system and tired conservative campaigning schemes. And at the end, the AFP campaign manager Laura comes on and informs folks how to get involved in the upcoming primary elections. Stay tuned. RedIceMembers.com is the website. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening.